What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on the legend of the small-sided games, Zach Nowak. Zach, good to have you here.
Happy to be on here. Really excited to be talking hockey this morning.
Yes. I'm late, so apologies on that one. As normal, let's blame the coach. It's where we go.
Yeah. To be fair, it is early, so I'll give you that one. I'm a little crusty-eyed also, so. No biggie.
All right. Well, you are the coordinator of coach education plus the player development assistant with USA Hockey. Man, sounds like you're getting into a lot. So, you know, what gives here? Okay, we got coaching education. What are you trying to get, you know, into all of these coaches across the country? Obviously, it's such an important element. You know, coach development is player development.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, is that, you know, coach development is definitely the best way for us to influence, you know, and help players around the country. Ultimately, it's the coaches that are coming to us for coach education that are making the biggest impact on the nation. And so, you know, for us, it's about getting coaches to want to come to our coaching education stuff. I know that a lot of the times they have to, but it's getting coaches to actually want to go out and want to do it. And a lot of changes have happened over the past year, or 2 or 3 years, I should say, to change the way that curriculum is presented and to make it more coach-centered or student-centered, in an effort to kind of accomplish that goal of making it more exciting to be involved in these clinics, to make it more engaging and to make it more relevant for these coaches. So it's been really fun to watch things change, and it has been pretty busy, but it's been a really fun journey so far.
Yeah. And it's a big difference between what they used to be to what they are now. I used to give so much crap to USA Hockey, because it's like, all right, what PowerPoint do we have today? Let's go. And now it's much more of a engaged learning environment, which is great. And then everyone's actually stealing from USA Hockey. So all of the other Olympic sports are actually ripping off the hockey guys and girls. Who would have thought?
It's so true. Like when I first started, I was telling Bill Sweetie had actually asked me to present at one of his clinics. And I remember I was just like, oh my goodness, I'm fresh out of school. I think I might've even been doing some presentations while I was still playing here at Kent. And I remember how intimidating it was to stand in front of a group, and me as someone who's barely even coaching, trying to convey a message to all these coaches who have been coaching for a while. And I stand up there and I talk in front of everyone, and a few people like it, and a few people are falling asleep, and a few people are just happy to, yep, okay, check, yep, I'm done, great, I can go now do what I actually want to do. And to see the change from that stand up you know, lecture hall to now you know, round table discussions where there's breakout rooms and there's, you know, lots of questions being asked, and you know, kind of helping these coaches along on their journey and not necessarily just saying, here's what you need to know, now go do it. It's let's have a discussion. Let's talk about how this is relevant, and let's help you apply this to your environment.
Yeah. And I love the like mock interviews or like the mock going through, like you're actually coaching, which everyone's like, oh, this is so easy, blah, blah, blah. Sounds great. And then they get in a group, you know, breakout group of a few other coaches and like, oh man, it's a lot harder actually like flexing my coaching skills than I actually thought. And, what really gets me is the ones that like think that they know good coaching skills and they have good coaching skills, and then they just dive in and completely miss the mark, where it's not about the knowledge of the game or the proper technique, but how do you convey, how do you teach, how do you coach and actually get that message across to the learners, checking for understanding, etc. I'm guessing that's been a massive change for you, just even as like a personal coach with your own teams and players.
Yeah, the how to coach school skills, I think, are one of the coolest things that USA Hockey implemented into the coaching education program. With the USCCE, the U.S. Center for Coaching Excellence, they work together in developing these how to coach skills, and it's something that the USCCE has been doing. And you know, it's really interesting because you're right. Like, oftentimes coaches are like, "Oh, I have all this content knowledge. I have all that content knowledge, and then, you know, I can't necessarily, I think I can do it. Like, I think I'm a really good coach, but I can't convey that message as well as I think." And it really gets highlighted in those how to coach skills, right? When all of a sudden you're asked to explain an activity or explain a technical skill, and then you see the coach that has all this technical knowledge that is, you know, talking for 3, 4, 5 minutes. And if you take that now onto the ice, a coach is standing up there talking for 3, 4, 5 minutes. In some markets, that's like, that's, I don't know, $10, $20 a minute. And it's like, yeah, it's a lot of money wasted. So how can we be more efficient so that we're making the most of our time, making the most of our money, but then also making sure that our players actually get the message that we're trying to send? And I think one of the hardest things for me when I first started doing it was that checking for understanding. But now when I see it any other way, it's like oftentimes, you know, we talk to the players and we're like, yeah, you got it. And they're like, uh-huh. And then, you know, it's NASCAR to see who can get to the end of the line because they don't want to go first because they don't understand it. And so being able to check for understanding and really get a gauge of, okay, my players actually kind of get this, or okay, maybe I need to re-explain this, or maybe we're not ready to go here yet. But being able to check for understanding and actually get an understanding of what they know and if they're ready to move on. So,
man, just strike a chord with my favorite area of coaching, or my biggest pet peeve, I guess. You know, the classic two worst questions in hockey: does it make sense? And any questions? Oh, awful, awful. So maybe give us some examples of a better way to check for understanding.
Yeah. So, you know, asking some open-ended questions, but also kind of getting them to rephrase some, you know, some things that you talked about. So if you're up there explaining an activity, and let's just say, we'll take a simple one, but we'll say, all right, in this activity, we're going to play 3-on-3 cross ice hockey. Any pass that gets any goal that is scored off a pass is worth 3 points. Any normal goal is worth 1 point. All right. So Greg, when we go out here, how do you get points in this game? And, you know, Greg's going to respond and say, oh, we get 3 points for a goal off a pass. Okay. Jeff, you know, how else can we get points? Well, you can score just a normal goal and it's worth 1 point. Okay. Ryan, how many people are going to be out on the ice? It's going to be 3-on-3. Great. All right, let's go do it. All right. So now I know that Greg, Ryan, and Jeff all know those rules. And because I'm constantly asking players to essentially summarize or reiterate what we're doing, players are constantly thinking and listen. They're required to think and listen to what I'm saying, what I'm doing, but I'm also keeping things real short and simple to the activity so that they can leave with that information. And if we're, you know, that was just explaining a drill, but that could also be how we explain shooting or passing or skating or things like that. I heard some advice. I don't know if it was advice, but essentially Stuart Armstrong, who has a podcast called The Talent Equation, he's got some pretty good stuff too. And he talked about the 10-second rule, trying to explain your activities in around 10 seconds. And if it takes more than that, or maybe it was 30 seconds, but either way, a short period of time explaining that activity in under 30 seconds. If you can't explain it in under 30 seconds, then it's too much. And what you can do is you can kind of scale those activities. So you explain that activity. And then maybe if it's a little bit more complicated, after a few minutes, you stop it, bring everyone in. Hey, all right, now we're going to add this, and then send them back out. And you can kind of scale the activities up without having these massive 5-6 minute long explanations. Cause I think we all know that, especially kids, they're not going to get all of that information.
Yeah. And if you jump to complexity too early, all the kid's thinking about is what exactly they need to do, rather than exploring what do they need to do to the game. How do they need to play the game? Yeah. Another great pet peeve. Yeah. You know, we just keep going down our pet peeves here of like jump to complexity, checking for understanding, all of this is it's absolutely massive. And it's like, you just add an element each time. Like, for example, like when I input my power play, I don't start with a power play. I start with a rondo, and we just like zoom it up in bigger pictures and bigger numbers, and we increase the complexity. And now you have an ability to, oh, I need a puck support here, or I need to look this way, and then I'm passing a different direction, all of that. So I think it's awesome, even from a drill and activity component, but also maybe a situational environment and how much complexity do we want the players to be processing, especially if they're younger. It's really hard to jump straight to a 5-on-5. Maybe we need to just do a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-2, something like that, and then go to a bigger ice surface, bigger numbers, etc.
Yeah, no, it's 100%. I mean, it's if you can't learn, like, are you going to learn in the 5-on-5 game? Yeah, you might learn some things, but if we're, once again, we're trying to maximize the efficiency of our ice time, how do we get kids lots of reps? How do we get kids lots of different reads that they have to make? And how do we make sure that they're appropriate for that child's skill level, right? So if it's 5-on-5, to your point, there's way too much going on. There's way too much complexity. So how do we scale things back a bit so that we're meeting kind of their optimal challenge level, based on where they're at in terms of the skill that you're trying to develop. So if it's if you're trying to develop breakout skills, scale it back into a 2-on-2, support activity. And maybe even if 2-on-2 is a little bit too much, maybe you can change some of the constraints of the activity, so that you can scale that pressure back a little bit, or scale that time and space back a little bit, so that they can make those decisions and start to work through whatever it is, that skill that you want them to work on, whether it be an individual skill or a team skill. But, changing those constraints, that's something you've talked about in your podcast before, is the constraints led approach. But, changing those different things to influence, time and space, influence what decisions you want them to make. Right, like that first activity I explained, like when you assign 3 points to goals off of passes, well, you're highlighting the idea of, hey, we want to look to try to pass here, right? But that doesn't mean we can't just shoot and score when we have it. But as a player, now I'm going to look to pass more. As the receiver of the pass, I'm going to look to shoot more off the pass instead of receiving it and then maybe looking to pass back, or receiving it and looking to dangle. I'm going to receive pucks and I'm going to look to shoot pucks right away. So just by what we do within the activity, we are changing the way that the players are interacting with the game. And you can't really do that effectively in that just let's play 5-on-5 hockey, right? That's why practices are so important in terms of players' development.
Yeah, and finding different ways to challenge players. I, you know, Marty St. Louis was on here, and that's all he talked about. I was like, I'm just finding ways to challenge my players. And that may be with a small-sided game. I might be in a tighter space, whatever it is, finding ways to challenge the player. And I love playing like 3-on-3 cross ice. You can only use your forehand. Mm-hmm. Sounds stupid. And then you actually look at what is it actually getting out of it. And you're like, oh, yeah, they actually have to initiate good body positioning first. You're working on body positioning, which is so critical. And you know how many players just go with their stick and it's like a little whack-a-mole challenge rather than, oh, okay, I'm going to put my butt into your hands and you can't touch this puck. Yeah. So that's like an absolutely massive. So awesome stuff there. I want to go back to the checking for understanding and the coaching skills. Another one I think it's absolutely massive for coaches and even like parents or even players who are trying to explain it to someone else, is the idea of separating the demonstration from the explanation. So I'd love to hear you go into that a little bit more.
Yeah. So, that's a really good one. So separating the explanation from the demonstration is, oftentimes we, Heather Mannix does a really good job with explaining this one. And she always asks coaches, and I bring up Heather because we did a lot of clinics together this year. And we were, her, myself and Ken Martell were grinding clinics, it felt like, this year. But I heard her do the how to coach skills presentation many times. And the one thing she asked coaches is she always asked them, so, all right, coaches, how many of you have unbelievable acoustics in your rink? And like all of them just start laughing, because we all know that rinks don't have the best acoustics. When you say things, if you're not looking directly at the people or whoever you're trying to talk to, that your voice is getting boomed all over the place. It's bouncing off the walls. It's, you know, like no one can hear you unless you're looking right at them. So one of the biggest issues, especially in rinks, is when we're trying to demonstrate and trying to talk, oftentimes the kids are trying to listen to you, but they can't because you keep turning your back. You know, when you're doing the demonstration, and they can't really get that message. But at the same time, like, we have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this demonstration? Well, the reason we're doing the demonstration is so they can see what good looks like. They can see what we're working towards, right? And so if our goal is to get them seeing what good looks like and what they're working towards, well, then let's make sure that that's what they're focused on. So when we do our demonstration, we want to make sure we do our demonstration in silence. And we might ask them, say, hey, I want you to look at what I'm doing with my knees here. And then you go out and you do, maybe you're doing, you know, tight turns or whatever it might be, but then you go show that movement. And then you come back to them and you say, okay, what did you notice? And now the kids might say, oh, I noticed that your knees were bent, or I noticed that, you know, one leg was in front of the other, or I noticed whatever, right? But you ask them to look at something, you go do it in silence, and then you come back, and that allowed them to direct their attention towards what you wanted them to focus on. Because if we're demonstrating while talking, they're likely not looking at what we ask them to focus on. They're looking at our face, because that's where we're conveying some information. So yeah, definitely. I will say once again, that's another one. These how to coach skills for me have been like totally changed how I coach. Because I think we were all there, right? We were all there at one point in our coaching career where it was like, you're just demonstrating and you're yelling, and I just need to yell louder. That's all. I just got to, you know, like. And so, yeah, it's been a really positive change. But like, when you do it and when you show it, it allows them to learn just a little bit better, and allows you to actually focus the player's attention on what you want them to take away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to name change. I think coaching skills is a lot simpler, and your mind knows exactly what we're talking about when you talk about how to coach skills. It's like, oh, how are we about to go and coach skills to players? I'm like, I think you guys are getting the wrong ideas here.
Yeah.
It might be a little confusing there, but yeah, it's the skills of coaching. So I absolutely love and adore that. And you've mentioned this in a few of your answers, but I really want to draw it out. The idea of asking questions to players and the ability to ask quality questions. Yeah. I think the first thing people always go to is, oh, I'm going to become a better question asker just by opening the question up. So rather than a simple yes, no, just open it up. And I have found that it's an admirable approach, but extremely ineffective, because half the time coaches go in like, all right, what went well there? And like, you know, their answers are everywhere.
Sure.
So like there needs to be a little bit more direction. And based on the smile on your face right now, I can see that you're very passionate about this. So I'm going to shut up now and let you handle
No, but that's true, right? Like I think we all go through this coaching journey where we hear like, okay, asking questions is a really effective way to, you know, get your players thinking, get them engaged in the learning. Cause you know, when, like the brain that does the thinking is the brain that does the learning. So for us, we want to get that brain thinking. And I think we all go down the journey. We hear about it and we start, okay, I'm going to ask questions. And then you start with the, do you think you should have done that there? And the kid's like, I don't know. Yes, no, maybe. What do you want to hear from me? Right. And we ask these yes or no questions and we're like, okay, that didn't really work. And then to your point, then we go down this journey where we ask really, we go to the opposite side of things and we say, okay, what went well? And it's like, okay, you're going to get a ton of different answers, and that's okay at times, right? It depends on what you're trying to get out of it. But you're right that over time, when you start to become really efficient with the way that you ask questions, it's how you ask the question can become really, really important. Right. And so, once again, you know, myself, Heather and Ken, we spent a lot of time working on the level four, and Liz Cohen, she was even a part of that for a while until she went on and got, she got a different position within USA Hockey, and we love her and miss her dearly in the coaching education side. But like we sat together working on the level four, the new level four curriculum over the last year. And I mean, I cannot tell you how much time we spent on how we are going to ask certain questions to get these coaches down the path that we wanted them to kind of navigate down. And if we ask these super wide questions, well, it's not really directed to where we want to go. So in our heads, we had to have an idea, okay, where do we want to go? And what kinds of questions are we going to ask along the way to kind of guide them to this point? And so that's, once you start to get really good at asking questions, you know, you start to figure out, okay, how can I ask this question in a way that's going to start to direct them down the path that I want them to go down? And so both types of questions, I believe, have value, and lots of questions have value. It's just what you're trying to do and what you're trying to get out of them. And so asking super wide questions, it still has some value. You know, in terms of maybe you ask that question to the players, like generally you just want to know what's on their mind. Hey, like, you know, how did you feel about this last practice? And you actually want to know, like you're trying to generate some feedback from them. Like, hey, what did that practice make you think about? And then there's maybe asking questions to kind of guide them a little bit. Hey, what did you notice about, you know, your defenseman when you came in one-on-one? Right? And now we've gotten really specific into, okay, what did I notice about the defenseman when I was coming one-on-one against him? Right. And so now you can have these very much more directed conversations versus what did you see on that last rush? Right. Definitely two different ways to ask a question. One can be a little bit more specific. One can be a little bit more vague. But either way, at the end of the day, we want to ask some open-ended questions to get the players thinking about their game and engaging in the learning process.
Yeah. Love the quote there. Mm-hmm. The brain that does the thinking is the brain that does the learning.
I'm not fantastic. Going to take any credit for that. That is also a product of either Ken or Heather, one of the two, when we were developing some of the curriculum. So yeah, it's a big section in the level four is generating and providing feedback. So it's been a really fun learning journey for myself, listening to those two talk about asking questions, because I will say that they're probably some of the best at it. But
yeah, that's where we have our disagreement. I think we should talk about question asking more directly in the earlier modules, and then we can get to the more specifics and getting cute with it on feedback. I know it's a build, but yeah, to each their own. I just think with coaches, they don't know how to go about it. And I think the best way to go about it always is to check in for understanding, check in for where the current, like where a player is mentally. Are they ready for a message? Are they not? Where are they thinking? We want to, yeah, generate feedback. We also want to guide and influence the attention. But yeah, that it's a big thing, and probably it's too early, and they're 100% right. They do a lot more research than I do. So USA Hockey's in good hands there. Yeah. Next question I do have for you, and maybe you've got something to add in before I get there, but is, you know, what is actually skill development and skill acquisition? Because I feel like a lot of people get this completely wrong, and it's been wrong for almost everyone for a really long time. And this is the new charge that myself and I believe others in higher places in many different, whether it be Hockey Canada, over in Sweden, and definitely in USA Hockey, of what it actually is.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, I don't know if I have all the right answers for this either, but for me, like when we've looked at skill in the past, we've looked at it as the kid that can stick handle, you know, do all the stick handling maneuvers. They can skate really fast. They can shoot really hard. They can hit all the targets when they're shooting, right? Like they look the part. They look really good, but you know, the way that USA Hockey's done a really good job with this, but just looking at the way that we talk about skill is really like, what really is skill? Is it stick handling really fast? Is it skating really fast? Is it shoot? Like, no, ultimately it's not, because we see kids all the time where they look the part and then they step in a game and they can't do anything, right? We've also seen players that do not look the part. And I will say that at the goaltending level, as a former goalie myself, I've seen lots of goalies that do not look the part, but they stop the puck, right? So then we have to ask ourselves, well, what really is skill? Well, skill would, at least under my definition, would be, you know, being able to perform these technical maneuvers within the context that it's required. So being able to actually execute, you know, these techniques within the game, within, you know, being able to execute a toe drag against a person, or being able to protect a puck against a person, you know, as a goalie, being able to read the play and get your body in front of it, right? Not the goalie lab goalie that, you know, practices their T pushes with no puck, no movement, no players. They just stand in a crease for, you know, 20 minutes on the ice and they do T pushes. And it's like, okay, that's great. It has some value. Like, there is some value to doing some on a post stuff, but when we look at skill acquisition, we want players to be able to execute within the context that is going to be required. And you know, kind of the way that we do that, at least from my view, is that we want to put players in representative environments. We want to put players in environments where they're required to make game-like reads. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be information in the activity that they're working in that's going to be actually relevant to transferring over to the game, right? So we know that, as we talked about at the start of this, we know that, okay, so things need to be game-like. Well, let's just play 5-on-5. That's as game-like as you can get. Well, we also know that we can't do that either, right? So how do we kind of scale things back?
I don't know. Andre Lacroix is very much on, we need to scrimmage a lot.
Yeah. Well, once again, this is my opinion. So especially for youth, right? How do we scale things back so that they can get lots of reps, It is lower complexity, so there's not as many things that they need to think about. But also have those game-like decisions that are going to be necessary so that as we do start to scale things up, we will more, those skills will more likely transfer over to the game because they've trained it under the context that it's required. So when we look at, I know long-winded answer, but when we look at skill acquisition, we need to think of what is skill? It's technical execution under the context that it's required. How do we train it? Well, we have to train it under the context that they're going to see in the game in an effort to then acquire that you know, skill, develop skillfulness, and then be able to actually apply it within the game. So it's no longer toe dragging around cones to get a good toe drag. It's playing one-on-one, you know, keep away or one-on-one puck protect or, you know, different things like that. It's requiring them to actually do those things within what they're going to see in the game.
Yeah. And I think that's the big piece here. It's like everyone knows there might be more efficient techniques that are definitely, especially with skating. And, you know, there's primary first fundamentals that are the same for everything, including like shooting and stick handling. Kind of need some wrist roll to be a good stick handler. You can't not have that in some capacity. But at the same point, are we overemphasizing technique rather than when and the timing that goes into techniques? For me, I think that's the big missing piece is people are misunderstanding, okay, we may have a technique, but the more important part is when do we apply it? I think we all know the practice player or the kid who likes to toe drag around everyone. Like, if you don't do they stop toe dragging for every single time. And like, that's the perfect example. Like they have a great technique and they look skillful, but the real talent and the real skill is actually the deciding, do I even need the toe drag? Maybe I just go around and puck protect. Like that would be fantastic. So I think that's the next crusade for you, myself, and others is figuring out and trying to convey to the larger contingent what actual skill development is, which is exactly what you talked about, technique in an environment or technique within the game. So that has the applicable timing component and reading of cues of when or when not to do something. It's a tough problem and solution to find. It's kind of like puck management. Some of the best NHL players have terrible puck management and then they figure it out as they go along. But it's getting feedback where your team gets scored on 2 seconds later after you turn over a puck when you really should have just dumped it in as your team's going for a change.
Yeah. And you actually, I wanted to go back to something that you brought up there is you talked about like, okay, the overemphasis of technique. Like you're absolutely right. And there's lots of research that talks about how actually most elite athletes or a lot of elite athletes actually have a lot of variability to their movement in terms of the way that they solve things. And you know what there is, because I think sometimes we come off as, oh, well, technique doesn't matter. Well, no, that's not true either. Right there. It is important because you can't skate like you walk, right? Because we need to utilize our blades, right? In a certain way. So there is a certain bandwidth of acceptability that is like, okay, that's good. And that's pretty good. And at the highest levels, you'll see like, as you go up, yes, there, you know what, there's a certain bandwidth of acceptability within technique that you might need to have to be at the NHL level. But there's some people that have they fall within that bandwidth of acceptability, but they're not in the NHL, right? Like it's because they can't apply a lot of this stuff. And so, you know, I just wanted to make sure that was said, that it's not that technique's not important, but it's finding that, okay, what is the bandwidth of acceptability where we say, okay, yeah, like you can't try to run. You're not going to go anywhere on the ice, right? So how do there has to be something in terms of efficiency of movement, but oftentimes we get so deep down into it that, I've seen plenty of videos online where it's a coach drawing lines and saying, you know, this player's knees need to be bent at a 47.5 degree angle. And it's like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's simplifying it down to the principles. Like for me, like I'll just dump a massive puck bucket into a zone and be like, okay, all I want to focus on right now is that you're shooting and pushing down into the ice. Mm-hmm. So really we're getting a down force, you're getting a good body shape rather than the very like toe drag to this point and then push down with your lower hand. And it's like where do you draw your focus, which is a conversation way longer than we have here. I'm probably sure of that.
You know what? And that's the expert, at least from in my eyes, is Nick Winkelman. He has a really good book called Language of Coaching. And he talks a lot about that stuff. He talks about how we can use metaphors to teach. He's done a really good job. And actually, Brandon Nerado, I talked with him earlier this year, and he's got a really, really, really good, he uses Nick Winkelman's, I guess, philosophy or ideals in terms of how he teaches shooting. And I can't remember all this stuff, but I know one of them was like, I'm sorry, I'm moving my camera, but it was like to get the elbow up, it was like pretend like you're holding books on your arm, right? And so it was just like it's like a saying, just a metaphor you teach these kids. It's like, okay, when you're shooting, like you got books on your arms, right? And so now all of a sudden the kids are getting their arm up, their elbow up, and whatever technical movement you want them to kind of get out of it, but teaching it through that metaphor, and they kind of start to figure it out and work from there. But yeah, you're right. We don't have enough time for that, but Nick Winkelman's stuff's it's pretty good.
Yeah. Metaphors are great for me. I tend to go a different direction, which is a lot more around like feel-based learning.
Yep.
And maybe, metaphors help on this stuff and communication. Yep. But for me, it's all about what is it going to feel like for you? And should it feel a little awkward at first? Because if you're truly learning something completely different or very new, it's not going to feel natural because you haven't done it before.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like feel-based learning is the ultimate where I want to get to. So like even for skating, it's like it needs to feel stacked and everything is centered. You do that, suddenly you're going less on your heels and less on your toes, whether it's one or the other, especially when you've got a larger group. So like for me, that's the massive piece is feel-based learning, which, man, I can count on my hand how many other people I know that are talking about that. So I might be the outlier there.
No, it's similar. It's like you said stacked. Like when you say stacked in my head, I can envision what that kind of looks like, feels like, right? And so now I kind of think about, okay, like I'm thinking about like just in my head being a goalie and loading my body, right? Stacking myself kind of over in an effort to so yeah, no, it's very similar. It's getting them focused on the feel, right? Getting them focused on that piece versus the I have to bend my knees at a 45 degree angle because coach said so. It's like starting. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's kind of same ideas, at least in my eyes.
Yeah. Well, it's the proverbial, like you need to feel like you're skating, sitting in a chair. Yep. And half the time the kid's like trying to get lower. So, their skates are tied up way too tight and way too high. And all that does is mean they need to get more forward lean. And now they're way over their skis and way over their toes. And it's just an awful, awful stack. Or they don't have the flexibility through the ankle, whatever it may be. So absolutely. One last place to go, I think, before we wrap this up, is your bread and butter. Who doesn't love a good small-sided game, especially when their entire team, including the other team, is all wearing the exact same color jersey. So what could have, What idiot did that once?
You know what? funny enough. So yeah, I can't remember where I had heard that the idea of doing that. And kind of what Greg's referencing here is we did, this was a few years back, but we did 3-on-3 cross ice, and we put tape on the helmets to identify teams. But everyone else, they were all wearing navy jerseys. And so one team had white tape on their helmet, one team had pink on their helmet. And it was kind of, for me, I was experimenting with a lot of stuff at the time. I was coaching a D3 club, our D3 club team here at Kent State at the time. And for me, it was my first year being a head coach, and I was just kind of experimenting with a lot of different things. And my goal with it was, I was trying to think, how do I get them to open up a little bit better and be more available options? And how do I get them playing a little bit more heads up hockey? And so, you know, it was really interesting to watch it. And I just figured I'd share it on Twitter, and ended up doing really well on Twitter. And I don't navigate the social media space very well. It was really, really interesting though. I learned a lot from doing that stuff, but actually upon doing it, I found out there's actually lots of different, like Mike Sullivan has done something similar in the past. I was just over in Columbus, and I was talking to Dave Caruso, and they have the helmet pennies. And so it's, you know, it's really interesting. It's just, when we design, or at least in my head, when I'm looking to design activities for our players, I'm thinking about like, okay, what do I want? Like, what is the problem right now? And what do I want my players to be able to get out of it? And how can I design activities that naturally just, they incentivize the behaviors I want to see? So in my head, it was, okay, I want them to open up. Well, you can't identify who's on your team just by jersey. You can't identify who's on your team by socks. So if I'm off the puck, well, I need to be looking in the direction of the player, and I need to be an open, available option. I can't turn my back to them. If I turn my back to them, they don't know which team I'm on. So it ended up being a really, really cool activity. We've done it a few times since, but it's things like that that have expanded, at least myself, in terms of how I design activities. And I do steal some stuff from people, but I try to think about, like, what do my players actually need? What am I trying to get out of this activity? And like I said, I do steal some ideas from people and apply it to my team, but a lot of it is just, I'll sit in front of the whiteboard in our coach's office and just think, like, how do I replicate what I want to see, and how do I incentivize the behavior I want to see? And a lot of the times, the activities we do here with our D1 club team at Kent, they're completely unique. And a lot of the times I'll do it and I'll have to change it and I'll have to adapt. And but it's it's really, really fun. And I just think of the idea of intentional design, like I said, like, what do we really want to get out of it? What is the problem right now? What does good look like? Right. And how do I incentivize that good within the activity that I'm designing? And like I said, for me, it ends up being very unique with our players, because we have a certain system we're going to run. We have a certain idea of how we're going to generally run it. We have certain players within our organization that play a certain way. And so, you know, how do I design those activities? And even if I'm stealing activities, how do I take a stolen activity and change it and adapt it to work with our players? So yeah, that definitely is, I don't know, I guess bread and butter, but that's, practice design is what gets me really excited about coaching. That's what's kind of brought me into coaching, was I got really, really excited in some of the literature, and soccer tends to have the most really good stuff regarding practice design. And, you know, a lot of that's because they have a lot of money, a lot more money than hockey does. But
Well, they have a few more paying customers, to say the least.
Yeah. So
there's more at stake. And when the system is less monopolized, is probably a good term to use here. You're fighting and scrapping, and you're going to figure out any and every which way to find a competitive advantage rather than being able to get a first overall pick that's a generational talent and hide over a lot of the deficiencies you may have in player development and acquisition. So fascinating there. I'm curious what you're running now for your small-sided games compared to when you first started. And as you're experimenting, what have you pulled out as the key elements or the key areas for you? I did not ask a big open-ended question like we already talked about not doing. So no worries.
No, it's a really good question. I will say that my practice design has probably been a lot like my question asking, though, is that, you know, I started with just thinking like, okay, I can play small sided games and I'm good. I'm teaching, like, you know, they're learning, like, but it's more than that. It's about being very intentional about what you want to see. Like, what is actually, like, having an actual learning objective? What do I want my players to actually be doing? And then how do I incentivize that behavior? And like I said, it's, you know, it's more than just playing 3-on-3 cross ice. Like, that's not necessarily what small sided games are about. You know, constrained space, that is a piece of it. But it's how do you constrain space to influence behavior? How do you change the amount of players that are involved in the activity to influence behavior? How do you change the rules of the game to influence behavior? How do you change the point system to influence behavior? Like, there's so many different things, just simply where you dump the puck in to start an activity. Where do you start the player? So like, if you have a cross ice game and you dump every puck in behind the net, well, naturally you're going to have players working behind the net more. You're going to have players forechecking more. You're going to have players breaking pucks out more. And it's like, okay, that's good. Still a little bit wide open, at least in my eyes. Right. So now how do we get them to start to see certain things? And maybe, like, we've done this before where we draw a line down the middle and we do the cross ice breakout game and we dump pucks in behind the net. And we tell the defensive team, if you cause a turnover before the midline, you get 1 point. And so now all of a sudden the forechecking team is finding, how do we work together, this three-man unit, in an effort to forecheck before this certain line? So right now they're working in a constrained space. They're working to kind of, you know, on some angling skills. They're working kind of together in an effort to cause turnovers. And now I might even take it a step further because I want my team to attack quick off of turnovers. And I might change the activity. I might say, okay, if you cause a turnover and get a shot on net, you know, in a timely manner, I might say 3 seconds, but I might kind of change that depending on what's happening. But I might say, okay, if you cause a turnover off the forecheck and get a shot on net within 3 seconds, your team gets a point. So now I'm influencing behavior again. It's okay, we're going to go in, we're going to try to cause a turnover, we're going to try to forecheck. But now once we've caused that turnover, let's find a way to attack quick. Let's find a way to support the puck quickly. Let's find a way to get the puck to the net off of the turnover when the other team is kind of out of position. And so that's just like 3 activities in a row that you could do. You could do that for 20 minutes, right? And start to scale these activities in getting out what you want. And so I would say that that's how I've changed a lot, is going from just playing games to play games, but to designing activities and changing the activity as I go in an effort to get the behavior out that I want to see. But you can't show up to practice without a plan and expect to do that. It's about showing up with a plan, knowing exactly, being very intentional about the way that you design activities, being very intentional about the way that you explain activities, being intentional about the way you demonstrate activities, being intentional about the way that you generate and provide feedback, right? Like you, whatever your learning objective is, you want to apply all those how-to coach skills towards your learning objective. Your activity should be designed towards your learning objective, so that everything is moving towards where you want to go, versus to your point earlier, when we ask wide open questions, it's not very directed. You're not necessarily going to know if learning is happening, because, well, maybe they learned something that doesn't have anything to do with where you're trying to go. So as a former educator, I was taught very early on that learning objectives are important, but it took me a while to actually realize how that applied to hockey. And so, yeah, I guess being much more intentional about everything that I do in terms of the small area games and the way I communicate as a coach within it has probably been my biggest change over the last 3 or 4 years.
Awesome. And the saying I have for my father was, a ship without a port has no favorable winds. So you need to be able to find that wind, tailwind, and that will start with having your objectives in mind to figure out, okay, where are we going? What do we want to influence today? Like for me, at the high school level, I'm constantly trying to get players to work off of each other. So getting rid of the whistle helps a lot. We have to look at each other. Yeah. Are we going out? We're going, we're good. You're good. Okay. We're going, let's do it. That's a good one. Or just finding activities where you have to read off of someone where they're out of the play, but then they're able to enter the play, or they're part of the play, but they can't go into a certain area until they're activated some way, in ways that they have to read off of each other. So it's a lot of fun. If you get into this stuff and figure out, how am I going to go about doing this and influencing the behavior? So that's cool. Thanks for sharing. I'm going to wrap up, because we're starting to push here up towards an hour, which is plenty for everyone to digest, and all the things that we dove into take a lot of brain power. So thanks everyone for joining us for a good mental sweat at this part of your day. So Zach, 2 minutes, anything you want to talk about? You know, you clearly do a lot of research, and you're still an educator, son.
Yeah. No, that's very true. No, this is perfect timing too. We actually hop on the ice here in about 20 minutes. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm just really excited and, being in this position. I know that you brought up a good point that in the past, I think some of these coaching clinics have been perceived in a certain way, in the way that USA Hockey educates people. But I do know that, you know, under the guidance of Bob Mancini and Heather Mannix and Ken Martell, like, things have changed a lot. And I'm really, really excited where things are going with USA Hockey and coaching education. And I'm really thankful to be able to be a part of that and work with these people. And for coaches, I'm really, really excited with where everything is going. And I know that as a result of being able to work with these incredible coaches around the country, that they're going to be able to better influence our players, in an effort to create, you know, more lifelong hockey players, more players that, you know, are engaged in the sport of hockey, more, players that, play at higher levels. And, you know, that's not necessarily the most important part. The most important part is people just love hockey. But as a result of everything that the coaches around the country are doing, that's kind of the goal, is, you know, more players playing hockey, more fans of hockey, more, players that have developed to really high levels. And, I'm really excited to see where this stuff goes. So, you know, for me, it's, my goal and my job is, like I said, it's getting coaches, away from the have to, and getting them into the want to. So a lot of cool things coming down the line in the future. But if anyone has any, you know, questions, things like that, ideas, you know, they want to talk to me, they can always reach out to me, zachary.nowak@usahockey.org. And then, yeah, wherever they want to go, questions about coaching ed, questions about small area games, questions about whatever else, they can reach out to me and then go from there. Yeah. So appreciate your time, Greg. This has been really, really cool.
Yes. It's also small sided games.
Yeah, small sided games, constrained space.
We can blow this up if we need to.
Yeah. No, so for sure. And appreciate you having me on, Greg. And I know at some we'll work out some time where you can hop on and we'll have you on the USA Hockey podcast and we can talk a little bit more about some of this stuff and some of these ideas. And it's kind of been a new project for us, and for me working in the podcast space has been has been a learning journey for sure. But it's been really fun, and I've enjoyed listening to your stuff too along the way. So it's been really great. Some of the people that you've had on and some of the interactions you guys have all had, and it's good. It's really good for hockey. It's really good for coaches, and they have that opportunity to learn from a variety of different voices.
Thanks. Really appreciate it. Glad that it's connecting with someone else and it's connecting with people who know what they're doing, like yourself. So thanks again for coming on, spending the time. I will let you go do what all coaches love to do, which is have a good practice. So good luck there. Thanks again for coming on. This was wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. We'll see you.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you Buttes here next week for a brand new episode.